This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 228, where today AC with no CJ is going to talk about the SharePoint framework recent updates, some cool stuff for Angular developers, and the Office 365 CLI, recorded live Tuesday, November the 28th, 2017. Are you being asked repeatedly to integrate different business systems in ever narrower timeframes with increasing process complexity? What if you could standardize the way you build these business processes so your team are focused on higher value tasks versus the nuts and bolts of running the processes and integrations? Nintex can make that happen. With the Nintex platform, work flows from person to person, system to system, to the cloud and back. Got a custom system you want to connect with? No-code extensions let you plug into systems simply and easily using REST and Swagger. With Nintex, work just flows, so your teams can work smarter, work faster, and be more connected than ever. Try it out for free for 30 days at www.nintex.com/trynwc. Hello, everybody. This is AC with a CJ-less show. After CJ carried the slack about 2 weeks ago when I was at a conference, it's my turn to do the exact same thing because CJ is sitting on a beach in Mexico teasing those of us who are friends with him on Facebook with constant pictures of him doing absolutely nothing. But we see fruity drinks. We see his feet, his toes, pretty ugly toes, CJ, and a bunch of sand and beaches and stuff. So it looks like he's having a good time down in Mexico. By the time we get back, you guys hear this episode, he will be back probably with a ridiculously messy inbox and stuff all over his desk. I hope the guys at Hyperfish have done something to his desk to mess with him. They can't do too much though, because they're all working this open space. So if they do anything to kind of like, you know, fill his work area with like styrofoam peanuts, it's going to be a mess for all of them. But I don't know, maybe they'll go through and they lower and they somehow lock his raising standing desk to like maybe just being about like 2 or 3 feet off the floor and give him like a kid's chair to sit in. I don't know. We'll see. But so today I wanted to do a little bit of a different show. I've got a couple guests with me today to talk about some stuff that we all spend a lot, or the three of us spend a lot of time with. A couple names here that I'm sure that our listeners who do SharePoint framework development are familiar with, and who have bailed them out of different things or seen them in the different chat groups or the different GitHub things. But what we're going to do is we're going to talk about three different things today. We're going to talk about recent SharePoint framework news. There's been a couple things that came out because there was a recent SharePoint conference over in Dublin, Ireland. We covered some of these things last week, but it'd be nice to get their take on some of these things. Plus, these two guys were actually at the show and they could share anything else that they learned. We'll talk a little bit about that. We'll spend a bunch of time, though, around the updates that we saw from Google last week or 2 weeks ago at, I guess by the time the show comes out, 3 weeks ago in Dublin, related to something called Angular Elements, which makes it easier for us to use Angular, the latest versions of Angular, in the SharePoint framework. And then we will also talk about a new project that one of our guests has spearheaded here called the Office 365 or the Office CLI. I should say Office 365 CLI. And what that is, and then maybe what other projects that may lead to. So without further ado, let me introduce our two guests here. We got two of them here. Our first guest, and I'm going to apologize. I have tried to say with the correct like enunciation and everything, and then I sit and I watch you present in a session, and I hear you introduce yourself, and you say your name so quick, and I'm just like, ah, damn it, I didn't get it. I've even tried to record your name on my phone before and listen to it, so I'm going to do my best, and you can correct me later. But this is Sebastian Levert. Sebastian there. Is that right? Did I get it good?
Close enough. I would say Sebastian.
All right, so Seb.
Yeah, there you go. That's easier for everyone.
There we go. Seb is an Office Development MVP, a Microsoft certified software developer, and works at Valo Intranet, the product that will make you fall in love with your intranet. He's a product evangelist and a partner manager for North America and is helping his partners and customers reaching their business and technology goals by ensuring the quality and simplicity are always the focus in Valo Intranet deployments around the world. Seb is speaking regularly at conferences, including one next week with me, around the world. That's not part of his bio. That's me saying that. Around the world, and like SharePoint Saturdays, European SharePoint Conference, and the European Collaboration Summits. Even though he loves traveling, he loves his local community, where he is an organizer of the Quebec SharePoint User Group, an organizer of the MS Dev MTL, and an organizer of 2 SharePoint Saturdays for Quebec and Montreal. And I've got Sebastian's blog and his Twitter handle. Those are both going to be found in the show notes for this episode, both in your podcast listener app that you have on your phones, or up on the site as well as in our newsletter that goes out. Our other guest is Waldeck MasterCards. Waldeck is a product owner at Rencor, where he designs and builds market-leading solutions that help SharePoint Office 365 customers to minimize risk from customizing SharePoint. And as a member of the SharePoint PMP core team, Waldeck helps SharePoint developers get the most out of SharePoint's extensibility capabilities. For his contributions to the technical Microsoft communities as a blogger, speaker, and developer, Waldeck is a 9-time recipient of the MVP title, and he frequently joins me at about 5 o'clock my time in the morning while I enjoy my coffee, and we sit there and we always seem to load up the next 2 hours in Slack and destroy a little Slack team that we have, free Slack team that we have with all of our, we'll only keep the last 10,000 messages. I think that we are probably responsible for the majority of the reason why everybody else's stuff doesn't get kept around. So Sebastian and Waldeck, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good morning. Good afternoon.
Welcome.
Is this the first time either one of you guys have been on the show? I feel like I've had you on the show before, but is this the first time you guys have been on the show?
First timer.
Oh, see, we're leveling up the show. This is great. We got rid of CJ and I got you guys. So things are much better. Hey, welcome to the show here. And both of you guys are, the three of us have talked a lot about SharePoint framework stuff. Hey, before we get into this, I want to put both of you guys on the spot. And this is always fun. And well, it's always fun for me, especially when I just saw your eyes open up real. I can see the video of you guys. You guys can't, our listeners can't see this, but let's just say that I could see the whites of some eyes just a second ago. I want to get your take on the SharePoint framework. I've interviewed both of you guys in the past. I know, Waldeck, I haven't gotten you on camera yet. Sebastian, I got you on camera on my little thing that I did with the Voitanos and the SharePoint framework in your own words, which hasn't been, yours hasn't been published yet. It's finally going to get around to that stuff in December. But if you would, let me start with Sebastian here. Give me your take on the SharePoint framework, you know, in about a minute or so. And give me your favorite part of it and your least favorite part of it, or your biggest challenge that you have with it.
Oh, well, that's to put me on the spot, yeah. So I would say my take on the framework is that it's, for us as a modern web dev, I think that's a great move forward for SharePoint stuff. I've been doing a lot of stuff in the background in the past using like all the things that those guys at Rencor are all highlighting as the worst thing in the world, so script editor parts and all that kind of stuff. But then now we have a real platform. I think it's cool. I think we're now becoming more web devs than SharePoint devs, which for us is a good thing. So that's my best part of the SharePoint framework. It's not only about SharePoint, it's about the web dev. You know anything about web dev, you know pretty much everything about the SharePoint framework. My least favorite part of the SharePoint framework is the fact that it is a new framework. Even if it's not a new framework, it's a new framework. So a lot of people are not like fluent in modern web dev. So it's a huge learning curve. New languages, new libraries, new packaging, Webpack and React and React. Like you need to learn a new templating engine, even though you've been using jQuery or Angular or Vue.js or whatever. You need to learn a bunch of new stuff. So it's not just here's a new tool, you're productive day one. It's here's a new tool, work like crazy, and then you'll get productive at some point.
That's good. Waldeck, how about you? You've spent a lot of time with this. I mean, I think everybody has kind of looked at it and said that Waldeck is responsible for the documentation of the SharePoint framework. And I mean, you're very active in the GitHub issues list for a lot of the questions that people pop up and everything. So what's your take on the SharePoint framework? And then what's your favorite aspect to it and your most challenging aspect to it?
Right. So I had a chance to work with it from early on. I think I started in March last year. I love the fact that I work on a Mac, and with SPFX, I don't need to live in VM anymore. I can just develop on my host using the tools that I've used for the last, I think, 2 years. I can basically do web development on a Mac, and I can do web development and not using proprietary APIs that you have to learn specifically to SharePoint. Well, nuance to that, and that's also the, let's say, the least favorite part is that the framework says that it's based on Webpack and Gulp, but if you've worked with them outside of SPFX, sure, they're behind the scenes, but they're not exactly used the same way as you would use it elsewhere, right? So there are some quirks, some things that you have to know that whenever you want to build a task or you want to change things, you cannot just apply what you know about Webpack and Gulp, but there's a different way to do it. There's abstraction layer on top of it that you have to learn specifically for SPFX. So ideally, I'd love that to equalize over years and to just become what everybody else does. so that new developers who have experience on the web but not in SharePoint can just step into that and use whatever they know and use and just be productive.
Yeah, those are good. It's funny you say that because I guess I'll do mine too. My favorite aspect to the most challenging, I would definitely say that I agree with the most challenging that both of you guys said. You know, first, it's a new framework. And it at least seems like it right now, and we'll see. I mean, the track record shows differently, but it seems like Microsoft is sticking with this and the SharePoint team is sticking with this. And this is the model that we're going to have going forward. And they're not going to do another big code reset on us again like they've done in the past with add-ins or sandbox or with farm solutions. It seems like this is going to be the one that's going to stick around. Again, they haven't done that in the past, so we'll have to see how that goes. But then, you know, the other side of it too, like you said, the term that I use, Waldeck, with this is that, you know, we went from having this open web development stack to being a Microsofted up web development stack. And, you know, they create this concept of RIGS. And I've talked to the guys that actually created it, and they definitely rationalize it. And it makes a lot of sense to them. And I get their points, but it's like things are different. Things are not the way that they're different than how other people are trying to come into it. I guess my fear or my frustration with it is that, you know, when they came out with this, they said, we want to make this new way of doing development or this way of doing SharePoint development. It's not new to anybody else. It's new to the Microsoft community, I should say, or the SharePoint community. But it's, hey, we want to make sure that SharePoint developers can do this new classic way or this new easy client-side way of doing development. But they missed the mark with that without having a Visual Studio extension. And ultimately, we do get a Visual Studio extension, but it came from the community. And frankly, it took about a couple hours to build a proof of concept with it. So it's kind of looking at Microsoft like, really, we had to do this a year and a half later and you guys didn't do this? Big shout out to Paul Schaefwein and Eric Schupps for spearheading that. But you know, then on the other side too, they're like, we want to be able to be open to anybody else that's doing client-side dev to be able to come in to do SharePoint dev. But they've Microsofted up the tool chain that these guys don't want to play with that stuff because, you know, Gulp and Webpack are so different. So that's the frustration side. For me, the stuff that's appealing is that it took that client-side solution thing that was the most common way of doing extension and customizations in SharePoint previously in previous versions using the content editor web part that Sebastian mentioned, the script editor web part. And making those first-class citizens. And client-side dev is just such a more robust way of doing development these days. It doesn't replace server-side, but it does a great job of, you know, providing really cool solutions here. So that's good. That's good stuff.
The Microsoft Cloud Show is sponsored by ShareGate. ShareGate makes it easier for organizations to adopt and use the latest Microsoft productivity tools, helping millions of users be happier and more productive at work. ShareGate is trusted by over 10,000 IT admins from over 110 countries to manage, migrate, and secure their SharePoint and Office 365 environments. ShareGate is recognized as the must-have tool for day-to-day administration of on-premises, cloud, and hybrid environments. Interested in learning more? Check them out on ShareGate.com to learn how ShareGate can make you more productive.
All right, now what I'd like to do now is we've kind of broken up the episode here into a couple different pieces. And what I want to do is spend a couple minutes here first talking about some of the recent updates that we've seen from around the SharePoint framework. Both you guys were at the European SharePoint Conference or ESPC a couple weeks ago in Dublin, Ireland. We saw Microsoft talk about a bunch of different things. I want to, you know, get your take on a few of these things. We've got ALM APIs. Those went GA. They're available today that people can play with. I've seen a few people, you know, pop up questions in different forums about some challenges that they're having with it. Tenant properties, site collection, app catalogs. I guess, have either of you played with the ALM APIs? Let me start out with that one. Well, like, Sebastian, have you played with these at all?
So if I give you an answer to that, I will give away the next topic that we have, but...
That's fine. Just don't go deep into it yet.
So I had a chance to play with them, and without technical part, I think that's a really big important part of, or a big improvement, right? Because it's been a thing that we've asked for quite some time. And I guess the really important part here is that to notice is that they are not only for SPFX, they are also for add-ins. Mm-hmm. So in other words, whatever investments you've done in the past, you can now apply these APIs to improve your deployment and make that repeatable, to automate that so that you no longer need to write Word documents that say, go to that site, drag and drop this, click this, deploy that. Now you can make a script that will run that exactly the same way across the environment. So that's a big improvement, if you ask me.
Yeah, I mean, I think being able to script your deployment where you have the ability to hand over really the asset and a script to someone else. I mean, the script is really the documentation that tells, you know, in the future, how do you go through and deploy this instead of doing the manual steps. It's funny that it's taken so long for this stuff to come out, but it does show that, I mean, this team, you know, this is a different SharePoint team. They are responding to feedback and stuff. And so the fact that this applies, you know, that we can use this for anything that deploys to an app catalog, that's great. Do you know if I know it applies to tenant scoped app catalog. We'll kind of touch on this in a bit here, but we also have the site collection app catalog. Do you know if these apply to the site collection app catalog as well?
So actually, if you look at the APIs, because they are based on REST, right? And if you look at the URL, it gives away the answer to what you ask. Because the APIs or URL says API web tenant app catalog. So it's for a tenant only initially, right? Who knows that, and that one day we will see it apply also to the add-ins and packages you deploy in the site. But initially, from what I understood, it only applies to the tenant scoped one.
That's unfortunate. It came out like that. But that's, I mean, I guess open, I'm curious if that's a technical thing or if that's just a feature thing they couldn't do just yet. But so Asti, have you played with these at all yet?
Actually, we did. From our point of view as an ISV, it's something that we require. Like, we were doing that kind of deployment in a very, very unsupported way before. We were opening those packages, changing the URLs in there, pushing that manually to the app catalog because we cannot like afford a document, a manual step we want to do to automate everything. So we managed to make it happen before, or now we're entirely supported. So we're marketing all of our scripts to use those ALM APIs. And that's going to be, for us, a big, big, big announcement. We want to use CI, CD on everything we do. And this is what really allows it without breaking everything around the deployment of those packages. So that's pretty cool. And we're using add-ins. So we're using SPFX and add-ins, and it both works. So that's pretty cool.
That's a big thing there. I mean, being able to use the CI and CD side of it. I've gotten, in working my course, I have a chapter listed for that. And people are like, well, I can't wait to see that one chapter. I'm like, well, hey, I know the ALM APIs are coming out. I'm not touching this stuff right now. I'm waiting until the ALM APIs come out because you know you're going to replace all that stuff. And there were people even talked 2 months ago, I see in the forums, like, you know, how do I do real CI, CD with SharePoint framework stuff? I'm like going, well, the first thing you do is you wait. And then you see the APIs come out. And then you go to write your scripts because you're probably going to throw away probably 70%, if not more, of all the stuff you do today. Yeah. Have you guys, as an intranet, as a company that, you know, that builds products for intranets, do you guys at Valo, do you have any interest in these tenant, you know, scope properties that we can take advantage of inside of the SharePoint framework?
It is absolutely amazing. There's some of our stuff that currently resides in parts in Azure, parts in like weird place properties somewhere in the root site collection, that kind of stuff. And now we have the right place to work. So for us, it's absolutely a must. And I like the way it was built. It's super simple. But at the same time, it's super useful. So for us, like, we're using Azure Functions, we're using a bunch of that. So we're going to store some of the URLs at some place. We're going to use authentication on the other side to make it secure. So it just makes a lot of sense instead of having to configure every single web part with some weird properties or to store it in a place where we don't know what's going to happen. That's super important for us.
Very, really useful. They're funny because I remember, and I'm not taking credit for this feature, okay? But I'm sure there are other people that asked for it. But I remember being at the, you and I actually were at this, I think we were at the same Dev Kitchen back in March of this year. Yep. And I remember at the end of that, Victor Whelan from Avanade and I were in the corner talking to one of the engineers, and we're like going, you know what we really need? We really need something like this. And we described tenant properties. I'm like, yeah, but what about security and all that stuff? I'm like, it's client side. You can't make it secure. I don't care about, don't worry about security. Just give me a property bag. You need the same thing I used to have on the property bag with an SP web, but I wanted it scoped at the tenant level. And he's like, well, yeah, you can't put connection strings. I'm like, I get that. I don't care. Or I can put them in there, but I got to know what the implications are. So it's great to see that they added this stuff. Waldeck, you have any thoughts on these tenant properties?
Oh, yeah. And actually, so being involved in my work with risks, well, the first thing that I saw a few times is that people actually store passwords in them or function keys or like... Because it's convenient, but a function access key, that's basically a password, and you're not supposed to store it there. Just because it's easy to use, it's not meant for that purpose. Yeah. So do not, yeah. Right? So that's the thing. And also a convenient detail that people often oversee because it's not really obvious, right? Because the way you use it is just there is a REST API that you can use to call it and you will get value. But unlike property bag, only tenant admin can set the value. So that's a really important piece, right? It's tenant scoped, but only tenant admin can set the value, but everybody else can read it.
That's a really good point. Because I mean, like you say, and as Wester was talking about a second ago, if you have it to use like as your endpoint for, say, an Azure function or for really any kind of RESTful endpoint that you want to be able to post to or write to, or a configuration thing, maybe it's the name of a storage container or something like that, while you don't want to put credentials in there, it allows you to have some control over what that main feature is going to end up being.
Right. So another use case that I see that would be an awesome fit for this is, imagine that you want to integrate with LOB and you go through dev UAT prod. These URLs change. So you would have one single place that you can tap to get the URL for dev, for UAT, and for prod without rebuilding your code.
Yeah, that's, and it goes back to what Sebastian was talking about, taking advantage of the CLI, or sorry, not CLI, the CI and CD stuff. I'm jumping ahead of myself there. Yeah. So we talked a little bit about the site collection app catalog, and if you're a SharePoint person, you know what the app catalog is. If you're a SharePoint dev, you know what the app catalog is. Site collection app catalog, it's a super simple concept. It's just, hey, it's scoped at the site collection level so that now I can deploy something to a site collection, and it's like the sandbox solution gallery we used to have, right?
Exactly.
It's scoped to that one site collection. Another big thing that is coming, I think we all thought that we would have it by now based on when we're recording this, and we may have it by the time the show comes out, but we don't know. But we know it's coming any day now, and this is not breaking news because Vesa Juvonen talked about it on the GitHub list and also on the special interest group, the JavaScript special interest group, is that one of the features we have that's coming to the SharePoint framework is the ability to, like today, if I build a client-side web part, I have two different things. I've got the package that goes to the SharePoint app catalog, and then I have my assets, manifest file, JavaScript files, images, whatever. They're going to go somewhere else. Microsoft likes to say CDN, but it can be anywhere. And we're getting the ability to include those assets into the package that if we have a CDN, an Office 365 CDN configured, it'll automatically deploy those things for us. That capability is coming to us with the next iteration of the SharePoint framework generator, which will be 1.4. What do you guys think about that? Is that a big deal for developers?
It is a big deal for us. For me as a dev in general, I want to be able to have a simple way to deploy my artifacts. Especially now with the ALM APIs, I can do, again, just one single pass. Deploying that is going to automatically be pushed to the CDN. My code will be aware of that, will pick it up from the CDN, and that's it. And then it's just so much simple. And this is something that especially if you were looking into like bundling images or something like that, that was a total nightmare today. It was like you had to push your stuff by yourself. You had to push to SharePoint. We've been using lots of the Elio's gulp task to push stuff to document libraries. That was the only way, but you don't necessarily want to have a gulp task in your CI/CD pipeline. That's not exactly what you want to look, but it was the only way to actually do it. It's going to be a big thing, and that's going to make it a lot more, for people building web parts and shipping web parts and selling web parts, it's going to be a lot more cool to have that compared to what we currently have.
Right, and I think so. When I think about it, for me, it's all about simplicity, right? So as you said, Seb, it's about deployment simplicity. You can just include assets, deploy them there, and they're included. And you don't need to worry about whether they have to go here, to Azure, to some other place. Another big thing is ALM again, right? Because now, or in the past or now, the URL where your assets are stored is included in package. If you want to promote that through dev, UAT, and prod, you have to somehow change the URL, but the URL is set during the build. So in other words, you cannot promote the same package. You have to build three times, which is not really dev, UAT, which is not really how things should be like in dev, UAT, prod. You build once and promote that and not build three times. And then also another big point is governance, right? When you give that to customer, you empower them with controlling the code. They own the code. They determine when it's going to change, when it's going to update, and they are not at mercy of someone else who might update that behind the screens without them even knowing that, right? So that's a really big argument in there for that feature.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, companies that have the ability, like an ISV, I mean, Val is a good example of this. When I say good example, I mean your situation. I don't mean that you guys are doing this, but it's, you know, having the ability when I have to deploy two different things, I as an ISV would have the opportunity to say, I'll host the JavaScript and the CSS. And if we need to make updates to it, then I'll go make the updates to it. And you don't have to worry about re-updating stuff. But that can be used both as an empowerment thing to make it easier for your customer, but also as a nefarious tool where I could make a change that all of a sudden says, well, it's a weather web part, but now I'm using the identity of the CEO to go grab contents from document libraries and post them somewhere else.
Yeah, exactly.
CEO doesn't have a clue what's going on there, but he's got permission to do it. So yeah, it's big stuff.
While many IT teams struggle with the impact of deploying Office 365, Zscaler customers are experiencing 40% or greater network performance across file download times, as well as TCP and DNS connection times, compared to using next-gen firewalls and UTMs to route Office 365 traffic locally to the internet. While you may know Zscaler as the leader in cloud security, they also have hundreds of customers who are processing over 1.2 petabytes of Office 365 traffic monthly through the Zscaler cloud. Visit www.zscaler.com to learn more.
Okay, so the next thing that I'd like to chat with you guys about, and this is what we're going to spend kind of a good bit of time here. This was a big deal to me, and it was to all three of us. I know the three of us spend. Let's say, let me try and keep the opinion out of this stuff. We spend a little bit. We have more of a track record with you being Angular developers than we do with React developers. Is that fair to say?
Correct.
All fair.
Okay. If you guys want to put an opinion in there, you can totally do that when I come to you. But I prefer Angular over React. I can't stand the syntax on React, but that's strictly a personal preference. It's nothing to do with the technology. It's just I'm trying to learn it. I picked up a couple courses from Udemy in the last few weeks to see how other people, you know, show React off and Redux and stuff like that. But I know, you know, one of the big things that came out of ESPC was that Google got on stage. And a guy named Rob Wormald from the Angular team got up and showed a new thing they're building into Angular 5 called Angular Elements that effectively takes the difference where in the past when I did stuff with Angular, I took over the entire page. It was a single page app. Angular Elements allows me to say, well, I'm just going to build a component. So you can think about it almost like I'm building a web part. And it doesn't have all these extra pieces to it. Without getting into too much in the technical and the code details and everything, what this is going to allow us to do once this is baked, I mean, I'm of the opinion that this is not baked yet. This is not ready for prime time yet. It's good for proof of concepts and stuff like that right now. But it really is going to facilitate using Angular inside the SharePoint framework in a reliable way, where today it's not really an advisable way to do it because you have these huge payloads going. So this new thing is going to be called Angular Elements. It's coming to Angular 5. We think it's coming in the next few months. We've got a proof of concept out there. I'll have links to in the show notes to a sample project where you can kind of poke around a blog post about it. And I know, Sebastian, I know you've done a bunch of stuff around this too. Why don't you give me your two cents on this and what you think about it?
First, my first cent is the fact that it works. And that is something that for me is super important. Like when it was announced on the Thursday, so it was announced on the Thursday of the SPC, and I had a session on the Saturday in Lisbon. It was enough time for me to move everything I have from some kind of a sluggish, hackish way of doing Angular to a proper Angular Elements. It took me like, I don't know, 2 or 3 hours to move all my code to Angular Elements, which is like, okay, pretty surprising. So I was extremely excited about that. The other thing that is also super exciting is that it's not only about web parts anymore. That is something that I tested, so I can use an Angular element inside a SharePoint extension, for example, which makes it easy to build a footer or header or whatever using my favorite technology, which was not the case with the way we were working before because it was all baked into the web part framework. So it's very, very cool. It offers a ton of new possibilities. Everything was already there, just was not working. Now it is. And it's something that it makes it so much easier using web components. We're going back to some kind of a web development standard that's going to be bigger and bigger and bigger in the next couple of months or years, thanks to what they're doing with Elements, with Polymer that is also doing that kind of stuff. So now it just comes back to the browser and just makes a lot of sense.
Awesome. Well, Nick, what about you? What's your thoughts?
When I first saw it, it was like, wait, what? Awesome. I mean, it's the whole idea behind Angular. It seems to be put on its head, like upside down, And where in the past it was all about the whole page, now we currently think about writing basically custom HTML tags, because that's what we do, right? That's what you get on the output. You write it in Angular, but when you want to use it, or you can use it whatever you like. You can use it in React, in Angular, in jQuery, in Knockout, in Vue, in whatever. And I think that's a really big thing that we haven't seen yet at that scale, right? So when that arrives, and assuming that that piece will be intact, that will be still the case, it will be big. It will be really huge for companies who run or who use multiple frameworks, but then would like to, you know, build things once, be really efficient about it, and reuse that across the board. So it's really huge. It's big.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's funny. I had the opportunity. I know I've talked back channel with you guys about this, and I spent some time with I have some of the people on the Angular team are friends, and I shared with them some of the challenges we had with SharePoint framework in Angular and working Angular 4, trying to take advantage of that inside of SharePoint framework and the challenges we had there. And there was a part of it where they understood the challenge, but I think as a whole, they've always kind of seen the engineering team at Google has always seen Angular was always used to own an entire page. But Rob came to the team, he really had more of the approach of that's great, but that's not how the world works. And a lot of the world has Angular in parts of a page, or it wants to use a little bit here, a little bit here. And you then also have a composable experience like you would get on like a Drupal or on a CMS, on WordPress, on SharePoint. And if all three of us build something, we could be sending it to someone and all of a sudden I don't even know that my stuff is running side by side with Valo components. And I have no idea my customer's doing that. You guys don't know that your customer's doing that, but we got to build to that effect. And you can't just kind of put it on someone and say, no, my stuff doesn't work with this other company, or have a customer understand, no, I'm using Angular 4. You can't use this if somebody else is doing something with Angular 5 or something like that. I mean, it's ridiculous to put those requirements on it. For our listeners, just to kind of give one little bit of a backstory here on something that Waldeck said, what this is allowing us to do is that you effectively turn Angular Elements turns Angular into a development tool instead of it being like a web framework, so to speak. And it is generating what's called a web component. And a web component, or web components is a collection of multiple specs. I'll have a link to a blog post I did on this in the recent weeks that has more, it links to other things, more information about this. But effectively what it is that a web component, one of the specs that we have is called custom elements. And what that allows us to do is to define our own HTML tags. So you effectively, you have a JavaScript file. That JavaScript file has a class in it. You then write one extra line of JavaScript that says define a new element, just like we have an element that's called select, or we have an element called table. We also have it, we can have an element called, I will use Rob's example, date picker. And that, so you have one line that says the date-picker goes with this JavaScript file. And then anywhere throughout your page, you use the angle brackets, date picker, and bind to properties and events, and it just works. And you don't care that it was done with Angular. Angular just turns into a dev tool, just like TypeScript is a dev tool for JavaScript. That, to me, is huge. And it really is going to change. I think, you know, going forward with this, it's going to even make Angular development, even outside of places like SharePoint Framework, Angular Elements is going to make Angular development very, very approachable and much and a lot easier for a lot of people to dive in without having to have this big mental map of dependency injection and routing and all that other stuff. So I'm loving the approach to it. It also, I think, is going to facilitate, you know, giving us the ability to even implement another component library that we've talked about. I know that you guys worked with the Office UI Fabric much?
Pretty much.
Pretty much, yeah. Your take, Seb, what's your take on Office UI Fabric? What's your take on, you know, how it's implemented inside SharePoint framework, the fact that we have Fabric React, which is the implementation of the control aspect to it, not so much just the styles?
Exactly. I think that's, I think for me, especially when we want to, like from a background perspective, Valo was not using or Angular or React, was using something else. Hmm. And then we're caught with the fact that we cannot even use the components in there because those are all React. So we had to take the core of the fabric and pretty much recreate all the components one by one when we needed one. And that for me is absolutely counterproductive. Mm-hmm. I want to be able to use a library and use it like I was used at the time to download a component from the web as a DLL and just throw in my app and just use it because it just works. Now today, it was kind of difficult to do that with the Fabric because it like there's an opinion on that. They decided to go React. That's okay. But then if I'm using something else because there's other developers and React devs in the world, I want to be able to use your styles because I think they did a great job in making sure the experience makes sense inside SharePoint or Office. Mm. But then I had to redo everything. Yeah. So for me, it's like, okay, cool. How can I reuse that anywhere else in any other technology in Angular in, I don't know, we're using Riot in our case. How can we use that anywhere else? And today it's absolutely impossible. Well, it is possible, but it's to mix both, which doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's going to be it'll be interesting to see. Waldeck and I were involved in a project called the NG Office UI Fabric, where we took the Office UI Fabric and we implemented controls using Angular 1.6 at the time. And it's a great component library if you're doing Angular 1.6 stuff, but that's it. If you want to use the stuff that's out there today, you know, from Microsoft, you have to use React. I'm hoping that we'll be able to get off the ground and show interest and have interest and contributions from the community that once Elements comes out, that we'll be able to build a new version of that library that will generate web components. And so you won't have to, like to what you're saying, Steph, it'll allow you to use any web framework or no web framework and still be able to use this component library and not have to care the fact that, oh, the contributors used TypeScript and Angular. All you care about is, do I run JavaScript and does the browser support custom elements, which every browser does, of course, except for Edge, but Edge doesn't do many things right. So, oh, come on, everyone knows it.
Not using it?
Yeah.
What?
So anyway, it'd be interesting to see how that goes.
A 99.9% SLA means you're protected from power outages, bad patches, natural disasters, and maybe even a dinosaur attack. Does it protect you from yourself, though? AvePoint Backup for SharePoint Online provides full fidelity backup and recovery, from individual items to entire team sites. AvePoint can run backups up to 4 times a day to ensure your data is secure. Recover anytime you want without having to pick up the phone and schedule restore windows. Learn why AvePoint is the Microsoft Cloud expert at www.avpoint.com.
Okay, so there's one more thing that I wanted to cover with you guys, and we're starting to run a little tight on time, but I want to be respectful of your time here. And that's a project that Waldeck, you started, and I'm curious, you know, Valo, you guys at Valo, Seb, I don't know if you guys are going to be interested in using this or if you're the PowerShell side with the CLI stuff and everything or with the ALM APIs and the CI and CD. But Waldeck, you spun up a project called the Office 365 CLI. Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about what this is?
Right. So that's a project that's an open source cross-platform command line interface that you can use to do exactly what it's called, to manage your tenant. A reason for it is that, for example, I am on a Mac. There are quite a few things that I've seen over the past weeks and months is that it seems like a trend. Microsoft releases new features like tenant properties, site collection, app catalog, but the only way to manage that is through PowerShell on Windows. PowerShell by itself work also on the Mac and Linux, but not PowerShell to manage SPO. That part is only exclusive to Windows. So as we see the development part go cross-platform with SPFX and Yeoman and Gulp and Webpack, enabling your tenant for CDN using tenant properties, you can do that only on Windows. So I thought, like, well, I was fed up with going every single time I wanted to do that to start a VM, run PowerShell, run a command, and then go back to my tools, right? So I wanted to solve the problem for myself, and then it turns out there were more people who were actually in the same boat, right? So why not have a CLI that you can run anywhere because it runs just as well on Windows as it does on a Mac or Linux, and that you can just run, and it works similarly to, if you know that, CLI that Azure team built, right? Because you can manage their stuff exactly the same way. You have CLI that you can run everywhere, even including in browser. Well, that's not the case yet with the CLI that I wanted to build, but who knows, right? Imagine that one day you would be able to run that CLI in browser. You would go to your tenant admin page, and in there you would be able to do everything.
I agree with you. I mean, it's something, it's a frustration that I've had too, where, I mean, heck, just yesterday I was in a group chat with someone and I was like, how do I get this classic site to switch over to a modern site? I can't figure out how to do it. Where's that feature? And someone's like going, oh, yeah, well, you can do it this way, or you can do it this way, but really you have to go through and use PowerShell to do it. And I'm just sitting there on my Mac and I'm looking at my Surface and I'm like, mother, I don't want to turn this thing on just to sit there and make a site go. I'm like, you know what? The demo next week is done on a classic site and I'll just go through and switch over to a modern page.
We accept PRs.
Yeah, there you go. See, and that's so. I, you know, Seb, you guys are an ISV, and what's your preference to this? I mean, do you guys prefer to build your own little installer? Do you prefer to have a script that takes advantage of PowerShell? Would you prefer to have a CLI? What's y'all's take on this?
A mix of all of those answers. we think what's the best. In our case, we're a mix of a bunch of PNP PowerShell stuff, a bunch of stuff that we built ourselves to do the hacks I was talking in the beginning with the add-ins and all that kind of stuff, and a bunch of REST calls directly to your tenant. For me, the Office 365 CLI would be a great way to simplify a lot of my stuff, especially if I want to run part of my deployment on a very simple Linux VM somewhere in Azure. Boom, I can just run that. I can run that through Docker if I want to. It would be super, super, super easy to actually do it. For now, we're using the PowerShell because we mainly live on the build side on a Windows environment. So for us, that's such a requirement. But half of our team is running on Mac. Mm. So for dev purposes, totally see the point there. For like prod deployments, I think it's more of a preference based on the organization. If you're like using more Linux or Mac as a deployment environment or Windows. But today I see lots of value in that, especially for the dev. In fact, I will start to use that instead of the PowerShell, and then I will bring everything I'm using in PowerShell, I might just bring it back to the CLI because it just makes sense. Just for small things, it just works. And for me, if I can code stuff and have fun, just better.
It's an interesting approach. I mean, it's not, I don't particularly care for PowerShell, but that's, again, that's just an opinion. There's nothing wrong with PowerShell. The thing that I like about this approach is that a CLI, the way that it's being done, it's all it's built on top of Node. And so the thing that I like, and these days I think it's safe to say that most IT pros, most devs that are doing management of stuff, it's not a big jump to assume, or it's not a big jump to ask and say, you're going to need Node to be installed. The same way you're going to need to have the PowerShell add-ins from PMP or the PowerShell module, however it's deployed or distributed, you need to have that installed to be able to take advantage of the, use PowerShell to manage your SharePoint Online tenant. I like this because it's just, look, if you use the CLI, there's no caveat of this only works on Windows or this only works here. I like the fact that it works everywhere. I had very high ambitions. Talking to Waldo, I had high ambitions of, you know, helping him run this project. And I was like, you know what? I've got a course I'm working on. I need to focus on that. I will submit some PRs. I have been helping him, you know, getting stuff set up and everything, but I'm looking forward to being involved in it. But I love the fact that this is moving forward.
AC's Voitanos delivers on-demand video-based training for developers on the latest SharePoint extensibility model from Microsoft in his course, Mastering the SharePoint Framework.
CJ's Hyperfish automates the collection of user profile information from users and organizational directories such as Office 365, SharePoint, Active Directory, and HR systems. The secure service supports on-premises, hybrid, and online environments. Bring your directory to life at hyperfish.com.
Okay, guys. So we've had a great discussion, or at least I think we've had a great discussion, and we think we've had a great discussion. Hopefully our listeners think the same thing, around talking about some updates around the SharePoint framework, Angular Elements, and how that's going to be great for devs that want to use Angular and as an option when building their stuff. Then we talked a little bit about the Office 365 CLI project. Now for the fun part of our show, this is when, if you're not familiar with this, we do a thing called picks. And CJ and I usually come up with one or two picks, just some links of something fun, something interesting, something geeky, something strange, whatever. CJ showed up with like some sheepskin or sheep wool shoes the other day. That totally was a left hook at me. I didn't see that coming. But I wanted to give you guys option to say, hey, you got something fun you want to share with us. And I'm going to go last. I'd rather you guys go first. And so, Seb, I'm going to start with you. Do you have any picks for us today?
Yeah, I have two. So the first one is a geek one. And I think it's a must for everyone, especially we talked a lot about the CLI and the ALM stuff today. If you can have a look at the Phoenix Project book, which is like the Bible of DevOps, read that, get that on Amazon. I'm currently reading it. It is amazing. It's a story between devs that hates operations people and ops that hates dev. It's amazing. And then it just solves the problem of DevOps. Amazing. The second one, which is a more of a funny one, there is something now that's called Uncyclopedia, which is the Wikipedia of fake news. And it's just absolutely amazing. Like currently in the news, you have the new wallpaper design for Trump's team, the neo-Nazi pool and deputant party. There's a Trump still batting in the thousands. It is just amazing. It's all based on the Wikimedia platform, and it's on my homepage, and I put like a random article every single day. Then I just read it and I laugh for like 25 minutes. So I love it.
Oh my God, this is awesome. Oh, this is the last thing I need is another default tab to open up in the browser. I've already got two. I have Hacker News and Reddit's homepage are the two that open up. Every time I open a browser, those two pop up. And I have the not safe for work filter turned off. So when I'm doing a demo, sometimes it kind of catches me off guard a little bit. I'm like, what was that? I'm like, oh, we're not going back there. These are awesome links. Cool. We'll put both of these in the show notes here. Waldeck, how about you? You got anything to share with us?
Yeah. So I had two of them, and apparently one broke along the way, and it wasn't me. So there was an open source project where somebody used TensorFlow. So that's the highly advanced machine learning neural networks technology to build a English to Yoda English translator.
English to Yoda English?
Yes. So in other words, imagine that you would, for example, say, I am on the Microsoft Cloud Show, that it would give you back in the camera bars, I am. So apparently they have a model trained to do that kind of translation.
That's amazing.
That was like, I remember where there was a, there was some sort of translator that would take what you did and turn it into like, was it Ebonics or something like that? It was some joke like that. It was something off the wall like that as well. That's too funny.
Yeah, and then another one I had was the thing that took my attention was an article about the battery that Elon Musk built in Australia. And that was already, I think, a week back or so. But what caught my attention was that thing gives the power of 129 megawatt hours. And to put that into perspective, 1 megawatt hour is electricity used by 330 homes during 1 hour. So do that math, like, and it's a battery, right? It's not generator. It's just a battery that's capable of supporting all these houses and places of energy when there's an outage, right?
It's nuts what he's doing. I mean, and then he's got like a huge solar farm that's charging it, stuff like that. I saw that article. That's a really good pick.
Thanks.
Yeah, good stuff, guys. So I've got two, and longtime listeners of the show will not be surprised by this, but I had to make sure that I grabbed these before CJ got back from vacation, because I know one of them, he was definitely going to rip off from me. I actually texted it to him while I was on vacation. He's like, oh, I'm using that for a pick. I'm like, tough luck, man. I'm recording first. One of them is an article by Popular Mechanics, and the title is, What Made the SR-71 Blackbird Such a Badass Plane? And it's a lot of the same history of the plane, of stuff that we've talked about on the show. Crazy stuff about how it flies both at low speeds below Mach 2, which is the speed of sound. Mach 1 is the speed of sound. But above Mach 2, it works differently, and how, like, when it's going to refuel, it has to slow down so much that the skin cools down to where it contracts on the plane and the plane starts to leak. But when it has to slow down to go the same speed as a midair, as a tanker refueler. So when it takes off, it usually loses enough fuel to where it's got to refuel within the first 30 minutes to be able to keep flying. But to do that, it's got to be going slow enough to be able, and it leaks a bunch of fuel. So it's got to get up to speed to be able to, you know, make the skin go, get hot enough and expand enough to be, so it doesn't keep leaking. This thing is fascinating. That's one pick. The other pick that I have is another geek pick here that I'm sniping from CJ. NASA lets, this is by the VRbase.com. NASA lets VR and AR headset owners follow Mars Curiosity, his tracks on Mars. So what this does is that if you have a VR headset, like a Oculus Rift or the Samsung thing, or if you have a AR headset, which is more like the HoloLens by Microsoft, you can pop this thing on and you can act like you're on the Curiosity rover and follow along the tracks and kind of look around and see what Mars is all about and stuff. Pretty freaking cool.
That is amazing.
Yeah. So which one do you have already? Which set?
I have neither one. I have neither one. I've done one of these. I've tried it one time and I was like, yeah, this is really cool. But it wasn't like, yeah, this is really cool. I want to drop $1,000 on it. It was, I like to do it. I like to play with it, but I don't know. I don't feel the urge to kind of dive in. It looks like it's just more of a play thing to me still. Yeah. So far. How about you guys? Do you have one of these?
No.
We all said the same thing. No, sounds cool.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, cool. It sounds cool. It's cool. That's it. Yeah. It's all $400 though. It's like, yeah, it's super cheap now. So
it's gotten cheap. I mean, like the HTC's got one, Sony's got one, Samsung has one.
Even the Oculus is now like $399.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah. It dropped like crazy. So it they want to bring it to the masses. So they had to. Now 400 might cut it, or
yeah, I know. I'm curious. One day, but yeah. We'll see. Well, hey guys, I really appreciate you taking the time to join me today. This has been I've really enjoyed our discussion talking about SharePoint framework updates and Office 365 updates and stuff. Yeah, so where can people find you guys? I mean, Waldeck, let me start with you. Where can people find you? Where are you next?
I don't have any trips planned until March. Then I'm going to the MVP Summit. And after that, I will be at the European Collaboration Summit in Germany, which is, I think, in Mainz. And that will be in May. So these are the trips that I have planned already.
Cool. How about you, Seb?
I will be in Chicago next week for SharePoint Fest, where I will be showing the Angular Elements. So drop by the session is going to be pretty cool. And then afterwards, I'm going to San Diego for the SharePoint Saturday and to Helsinki. Also for SharePoint Saturdays, the Valo team is in Finland. So we're mixing business and SharePoint Saturdays. And then a couple of other conferences coming until maybe end of May. I don't think I have anything planned after that. But lots of good stuff happening, lots of traveling.
Awesome. I'll be there in Chicago with you. I guess for us right now, it's next week, but it'll be by the time the episode comes out. It'll be the same week that it's there. So I will be at your session. I think I've got a session immediately following yours. So I'll be sitting probably in the front of the room and then bolting as quick as I can to go set up because I want to see the work that you've been able to play with some of this, the Angular Element stuff. So be cool stuff next week. Awesome. Well, hey, thanks a lot, guys. I really appreciate it. And I'm looking forward to seeing you guys soon.
Absolutely.
Cool. Thanks. Cheers. Bye.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show, and we'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a wave or an MP3 and provide a link so that we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is brought to you by Keith Ritchie. For more information on Keith's music, head to music.kritchie.com. You can subscribe to us in iTunes and the Google Play Store by searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook, searching for Microsoft Cloud Show, or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up to our mailing list by heading over to our website and entering your email to interact with us, participate in upcoming interviews, and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.